Welcome to Standard Chartered Money Insights, a podcast series by Standard Chartered Bank that brings you market views and insights on the go.
Hello everyone, my name's Manpreet and welcome to Through the Noise. Now the upcoming week is an unusually busy one in terms of central bank meetings. But out of the major meetings, the Bank of Japan meeting is the one that's likely to be watched more so than many of the others, given the rising consensus that policymakers might finally exit negative rates policy. Now, that would be quite a significant move for a central bank that has kept policy rates negative for over 8 years. And that itself coming against the backdrop of wage growth that finally rose above 5% for the first time since 1993. So some big potential changes indeed. Now, what does all this mean for Japanese equities, the yen, and indeed financial markets globally? Joining us today to discuss this and more is Audrey Goh, our head of asset allocation. So welcome, Audrey. Thanks so much for joining us today. So at last count, we have central bank meetings from the US, Japan, UK, Switzerland, and Australia next week. And that's just the developed market. So in your opinion, what should investors be focused on as we go through the week?
Well, hi Manpreet. The spotlight is likely to be on the Federal Reserve as well as on the Bank of Japan, BOJ. So on the one hand, the Fed wants to cut rates to support slowing growth, but they probably can't do so yet after the hotter than expected inflation report recently. In the meantime, if we look at the BOJ, they are under increasing pressure to end its negative interest rate policy for the first time since 2016. Now, a mere end to the BOJ negative interest rate is unlikely to unsettle markets, but the emerging policy divergence between the Fed as well as the BOJ, if extended further, could have potential implications for rates, FX, as well as the equity markets, especially since the US market is also valued pretty much near the top end of its historical range, while the Japanese yen actually remains extremely undervalued. So I think for next week, I think what's really important is we shall hear of the Fed's first public reaction to the hotter than expected CPI and PPI print for the first time. Money markets have so far pushed back on the timing of the first Fed cut to June. So that's pretty much bringing it closer to our own expectation. And markets have also reduced their expectations of the total number of rate cut this year to around 3 rate cuts or 75 basis points. So that also pretty much brings it in line with the Fed's projection that was made back in December last year. So obviously, the Fed's commentary and their new economic projection next week will also show whether it agrees with the market assessment or not. And our expectation is shelter inflation, which accounts for almost half of core CPI inflation, and that is likely to cool later this year based on new contracts. We believe that that should give the Fed some space to start cutting rates more aggressively by June in the second half to support growth in the US. And in the case of Japan, the pressure is certainly growing for the BOJ to end its 8-year-old negative interest rate policy regime and potentially hike rates for the first time since 2007. And this is after the spring wage negotiation, where we've seen workers' unions having negotiated the steepest wage increase in 30 years. So in terms of its impact to the market, an end to the BOJ negative interest rate policy is certainly likely to result in some short-lived yen volatility. But given that this move is also quite widely expected, so we do expect that to be relatively short-lived. But at the same time, if we look at Japan, they do have the most negative real rates among developed markets. Hence, a one-off shift from negative to zero or even marginally positive rates, while psychologically quite important, we do believe that it is unlikely to put an end to yen carry trade or lead to a sharp, say, strengthening of the yen for that matter. However, if such a move signals the start of a trend towards higher rates on a sustained basis, then it could well trigger a major yen appreciation given the sharp, the strong undervaluation of the currency. So as a result, we do expect the BOJ to adopt a pretty cautious, gradual approach in tweaking its rates and yield curve control policy going into next week's meeting. And then from the perspective of Japanese equities, the impact from a one-off adjustment to the BOJ negative rate policy, which may result in a moderate appreciation in the yen, is likely to have just quite a minimal impact on Japanese equity market. in our opinion, a potentially more important driver for Japanese equity market would be any decision by the BOJ to pause or even sell down on its ETF holding. As such, we do expect the BOJ to be quite careful in signaling how it would manage its ETF position. So overall, we continue to expect Japanese equities to outperform global equities on a 6 to 12 month basis in US dollar term. And we continue to see ongoing investors inflow, as well as the relatively more attractive valuations and improving corporate governance that we expect among Japanese companies to continue to support this overweight and constructive view on Japanese equities.
All right. Maybe moving to another market that's also in focus, which is India. Indian equities, of course, broke to a new record high earlier in March. So in your view, can recent gains extend? And are there any preferred sectors or themes that investors could focus on?
Well, we've seen Indian, the Nifty index, for example, outperforming emerging market by over 10 percentage point in US dollar term over the last 1 year or so. And this was largely underpinned by very strong set of economic growth, improving macro fundamentals, as well as strong earnings delivery, which basically pushed price as well as valuation higher. And in our view, this higher valuation premium for India equity is quite justified, given that, you know, among major economies, the India economy has in fact endured the impact of rapid global monetary policy tightening much better over the past 2 years. And we have also seen a continued pickup in investments, improving consumption as a result of low household debt and high savings rate, while overall inflationary pressure have pretty much remains quite anchored around the central bank's comfort zone. I think additionally, if we look at earnings, the Nifty Index EPS is expected to grow 17 and 13% respectively for this year and next year, which brings its overall average EPS growth to around 18%. Between 2020 to 2025, which is one of the best cycles since the 2004 to 2008 period. And at the same time, from a valuation standpoint, the Nifty index is now trading at about 20 times forward PE, which is certainly lower than its 2021 peak of around 23 times. So meanwhile, if we look at valuation, well, it is still higher than its long-term average of around 17 times earnings. We do believe that this valuation premium, whether is it relative to its historical averages or relative to peers, is actually quite justified given its superior economic growth and earnings delivery. And then last but not least, if you look at foreign ownership in terms of India-listed equities, that is in fact pretty close to its decade low of around 18%, despite pretty strong inflows of late. So, and we've also been seeing stronger domestic flows as well, given the greater adoption of financial assets, as well as systematic investment inflows into mutual fund. So net-net, in terms of India equities, we are overweight on large-cap equities, more so relative to the small-cap as well as mid-cap equities, given their larger margin of safety in terms of earnings and valuation. And then in terms of equity sectors, our preference here is more of a barbell approach, where we are overweight on domestic cyclicals, given their more superior earnings outlook. On the back of that, the likes of consumer discretionary, industrial, as well as healthcare will be some of the sectors that we are focused on.
All right. And finally, maybe just moving to gold. I mean, that's one asset class that started March on a pretty strong note and has broken out to a new all-time high. But in your view, is this rally sustainable? And is perhaps the Aussie dollar one way to benefit from that?
So gold prices has continued to rise, and that's pretty much on the back of lower real yields, as well as the US dollar, which have an inverse relationship with gold over the last couple of weeks. If we look at the latest COTC report or commitments of traders report, it basically showed that there has been a large jump in managed money positioning, where some of the funds were in fact previously running very low exposure to gold futures have now started to pick up in terms of the gold holding. And at the same time, central bank demand has also been very resilient going into 2024. So from here on, we do expect some of the CTAs or trend following investors could well join the rally and therefore further fueling upside in terms of price to gold. But having said that, there are also headwinds that I think investors need to bear in mind. For one, if we look at technical indicators, for example, RSI or stochastics, that do appear to be quite stretched. And second of all, if we look at the current price, it is quite elevated. They've just broken out of their 2000 sort of resistance level for a couple of years ago. And this could well dampen, say, central bank buying demand as well as fiscal demand, at least in the short term. And then thirdly, the continued strength that we've been seeing in the equity markets as well could also keep retail investors away from gold ETF. So on balance, if you look at all these factors, the bar for gains to extend further in the near term is pretty high in our view. So for that matter, if you look at Aussie dollar, the latest gold rally certainly may act as a near-term tailwind, given that if you look at Australia, they are one of the largest gold producers globally. So that could be one way to play gold as well. And historically, if you look at the growth rate of gold prices and Australian dollar, that tend to have a positive high correlation. And additionally, if we look at Australian economic fundamentals, that remain quite strong. If we look at the latest PMI, that has improved for about 4 months already to return back to expansionary territory, and wage growth has also accelerated to close to a 15-year high. So net-net, the market expect to see the first RBA cut only in the third quarter of this year, which is slightly later than other central banks, for example, the US. So that should support Australian dollar at 0.66 over the next 3 months and maybe 0.70 over the next 6 to 12 months.
All right. Well, thanks, Audrey. I think that's bringing us to the end of the time available today. So we'll wrap it up here. As always, my top takeaways, I think first, keep a close watch on the upcoming Bank of Japan meeting. But any volatility, of course, could be an opportunity to add exposure to our preferred Japanese equities. Second, when it comes to Indian equities, we have a preference for large cap equities over mid and small. And third, given what we've seen in gold and, of course, domestic policy could support the Aussie dollar to rise all the way to 70 cents over the next 6 to 12 months. So thank you, Audrey, for joining us today. And thank you, listeners, for listening all the way through. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast and we look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Standard Chartered Money Insights, a podcast series by Standard Chartered Bank. For more details, visit Market Views on the go on our website or click the link in the description.